listening to CPR, communitypublicradio.org. And this is Weekday World. I'm your host, Don DeBar. With a report of some of the news and events of the past 24 hours from the CPR Newsroom. From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
The country is doing well in so many ways, but there's such divisiveness, such division.
That was U.S. President Donald Trump on Tuesday in a meeting with the leadership of both parties on comprehensive immigration reform.
And I really believe we can solve that. I think this system is a very bad system in terms of getting together. And I'm going to leave it up to you, but I really believe you can do something to bring it together. Yeah?
Senator Lindsey Graham.
Bob, I've been doing this for 10 years. I don't think I've seen a better chance to get it done than I do right now because of you. John's right. I'm not going to support a bill if you don't support it. I've had my head beat out a bunch. I'm still standing. I'm Lindsey Grahamnesty, Lindsey Gomez. You name every name you want to give to me. It's been assigned to me. And I'm still standing. The people of South Carolina want a result. How could I get elected? I've been for a pathway to citizenship for 11 million people because I have no animosity toward them. I don't want crooks. I don't want bad hombres. I want to get a merit-based immigration system to make sure we can succeed in the 21st century. I'm willing to be more than fair to the 11 million. I just don't want to do this every 20 years. Now, we made a decision, Mr. President, not to do it comprehensively. I think that's a smart decision, but a hard decision. We've passed three comprehensive bills out of the Senate with over 65 votes. They go to the House and die, and I'm not being disparaging to my House colleagues. This is tough politics if you're a Republican House member turning on the radio. To my Democratic friends, thanks for coming. The Resist Movement hates this guy. They don't want him to be successful at all. You turn on Fox News and I can hear the drumbeat coming. Right-wing radio and TV talk show hosts are going to beat the crap out of us because it's going to be amnesty all over again. I don't know if the Republican and Democratic Party can define love, but I think what we can do is do what the American people want us to do. 62% of the Trump voters support a pathway to citizenship for the DACA kids if you have strong borders. You have created an opportunity here, Mr. President, and you need to close the deal.
Thank you, Lindsay. You know, it's very interesting because I do have people that are, let's just to use a very common term, very far right and very far left. They're very unhappy about what we're doing, but I really don't believe they have to be because I really think this sells itself. And, you know, when you talk about comprehensive immigration reform, which is where I would like to get to eventually, if we do the right bill here, we are not very far away. You know, we've done most of it. If you want to know the truth, Dick, if we do this properly, DACA, you're not so far away from comprehensive immigration reform. And if you want to take it that further step, I'll take the heat. I don't care. I don't care. I'll take all the heat you want to give me. And I'll take the heat off both the Democrats and the Republicans. My whole life has been heat. I like heat in a certain way. But I will. I mean, you are somewhat more traditional politicians than me. 2.5 years ago, I was never thinking in terms of politics. Now I'm a politician. You people have been doing it, many of you, all your lives. I'll take all the heat you want. But you are not that far away from comprehensive immigration reform. And if you wanted to go that final step, I think you should do it. And if you want to study earmarks to bring us all together so we all get together and do something, I think you should study it. Chuck, did you have something to say?
Republican Senator Chuck Grassley from Iowa.
I'd like to talk about the reality of the whole situation and take off from what Cornyn and Graham have said of the necessity of you working with us, and you're doing that by having this meeting and other meetings as well. But we've always talked in the United States Senate about the necessity of getting 60 votes, and that's pretty darn tough. But if we would write a bill that you don't like and you veto it, we're talking about a 67-vote threshold, right. Two-thirds in the United States Senate. So that's the reality of negotiating in good faith and getting something you can sign. The second reality is the March 5th date that's coming up. Because if we don't do some good faith negotiation and make progress and get a bill on the floor of the United States Senate, our leader is going to have to bring up either the House bill or the bill that some of us is introducing in the United States Senate, and we're going to have a vote on it. And those people that don't want to vote to legalize DACA kids are going to have to explain why that they haven't wanted to protect the vulnerable people that we're all here talking about. We're talking about everything except doing something for the DACA kids. You know, I would vote for a path to citizenship, which isn't very easy for me, but I would do it just as an effort. But there's certain things that you've got, we've got to guarantee that we're going to do.
That's going to be brought up. I really believe that will be brought up as part of what we're talking about at some point. It's an incentive for people to do a good job. If you want to know the truth, that whole path is an incentive for people. And they're not all kids. I mean, you know, we used to talk about kids. They're not really kids. You have them 39, 40 years old in some cases. But it would be an incentive for people to work hard, do a good job. So, you know, that could very well be brought up the path.
About legalizing people here that didn't break the law because their parents who broke the law brought them here. And we ought to be talking about what we can do for the people that had no fault of their own and get the job done and not worry about a lot of other things that we're involved in. And that means that we got to make sure that we tell the American people when we're taking this step that we're doing something that all the people agree to, you know.
Mr. President.
Democratic Representative Steny Hoyer from Maryland, who's the minority whip in the House.
Let me just say, I think Dick and I agree with what Chuck Grassley just said.
It's hard to believe. When was the last time that happened, Chuck?
We need to take care of these DACA kids, and we all agree on that. 86% of the American public agrees on that. With all due respect, Bob and Mike and Lindsay, there are some things that you're proposing that are going to be very controversial and will be an impediment to agreement.
But you're going to negotiate those things. You're going to sit down. You're going to say, listen, we can't agree here. We'll give you half of that. You're going to negotiate those
President,
things.
Comprehensive means comprehensive.
No, we're not talking about comprehensive. We're talking about
We are talking about comprehensive.
If you want to go there, it's okay because you're not that far away.
Mr. President, many of the things that are mentioned ought to be a part of the negotiations regarding comprehensive immigration reform.
Then if you want to take it a step further, I'm going to have to rely on you.
I think we should complicate
it, and you may delay DACA somewhat.
Democratic Senator Dick Durbin from Illinois.
I don't want to do that. You know, said at the outset we need to phase this. I think the first phase is what Chuck and Steny and I have mentioned, others as well. We have a deadline looming and a lot of lives hanging. We can agree on some very fundamental and important things together on border security, on chain, on the future of diversity visas. Comprehensive, though, I worked on it for 6 months with Michael Bennett and a number of Bob Menendez and Schumer and McCain and Jeff Flake, and it took us 6 months to put it together. We don't have 6 months for the DACA.
We're not talking about comprehensive. Yeah. Take a look at our bill, Ms. Yeah.
Well, you mentioned a number of factors that are going to be controversial, as Steny has mentioned.
But you're going to negotiate. Dick, you're going to negotiate. And maybe we'll agree and maybe we won't. I mean, you know, it's possible we're not going to agree with you, and it's possible we are, but there should be no reason for us not to get this done. And Chuck, I will say, when this group comes back, hopefully with an agreement, this group and others from the Senate, from the House, comes back with an agreement, I'm signing it. I mean, I will be signing it. I'm not going to say, oh, gee, I want this or I want that. I'll be signing it because I have a lot of confidence in the people in this room that you're going to come out with something really good. Senator, would you like to say something?
Diane? I would.
Democratic Senator Dianne Feinstein from California.
As you know, we tried for comprehensive immigration reform in the Senate. It was on the floor. There were a number of amendments. It got a lot of attention in the Judiciary Committee. And then the House didn't take it up. I think there needs to be a willingness on both sides. And I don't know how you would feel about this, but I'd like to ask the question. What about a clean DACA bill now, with a commitment that we go into a comprehensive immigration reform procedure like we did back, I remember when Kennedy was here, and it was really a major, major effort, and it was a great disappointment that it went nowhere.
I have no problem. I think that's basically what Dick is saying. We're going to come out with DACA. We're going to do DACA, and then we can start immediately on the phase two, which would be comprehensive.
Would you be agreeable to that?
Yeah, I would like to do that. Go ahead. I think a lot of people would like to see that. But I think we have to do DACA first.
Mr. President, you need to be clear, though.
House Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy, Republican of California.
I think what Senator Feinstein's asking here, when we talk about just DACA, we don't want to be back here 2 years later. You have to have security, as the Secretary would tell you.
But I think that's what she's saying.
I'm thinking you're saying DACA without security. Are you talking about security as well?
Well, I think if we have some meaningful comprehensive immigration reform, that's really where the security goes. And if we could get the DACA bill, because March is coming, and people are losing their status every day.
But let's be honest with you. Security was voted on
just a few years ago. And no disrespect, there's people in the room on the other side of the aisle who voted for it. If I recall, Senator Clinton voted for it. So I don't think that's comprehensive. I think that's dealing with DACA at the same time. I think that's really what the president's making. It's kind of like three pillars. DACA, because we're all in the room want to do it. Border security, so we're not back out here, and chain migration. It's just three items, and then everything else that's comprehensive is kind of moved to the side. So I believe when the president
lottery,
talks about DACA,
and
the lottery.
And I think you should add merit. I mean, if you can, add merit-based.
I don't know. Who's going to argue with merit-based? Who can argue with merit-based?
And
Diane, go ahead.
Do you really think that there can be agreement
on
all of that quickly to get DACA passed in time? I wanted to ask Mr. McCarthy a question.
Oh, yeah.
Do you really think there can be agreement on those three difficult subjects you raise in time to get DACA passed and effective? So
yes, because you have heard from Leader McConnell and Speaker Ryan, who said they will put the bill onto the floor if the president agrees to it. And us getting to the room, I haven't seen us be this close and having this discussion in quite a few years, the whole last 4 years. So I think, yes, we can make this happen. We all know it. We've done it before. Look, you and I spent a long time. We did probably one of the most difficult things to do in California, water. And I believe we can get there, and we can just keep working each day on this.
Mr. President,
I think what we're all saying is we'll do DACA. and we can certainly start comprehensive immigration reform the following afternoon, okay? We'll take an hour off and then we'll start. But I do believe that. Because once we get DACA done, if it's done properly with, you know, security and everything else, if it's done properly, we have taken a big chunk of comprehensive out of the negotiation, and I don't think it's going to be that complicated. Yes.
We have to be very clear, though.
Republican Senator David Perdue from Georgia.
In my opinion, we'll be right back here either 5 years, 30 years, whatever. But this, the chain migration is so insidious. It is the fundamental flaw in the immigration policy of the United States. If any conversation about DACA is being held without that consideration, I agree with border security as well, but any conversation about that is not going to go anywhere in the United States Senate. And if we think we're going to divide one side versus the other, that's just not going to happen on this issue.
David, I think chain migration has taken a very big hit over the last 6 months. You know, people are seeing what's happening. People, for instance, the man on the West Side Highway that killed the people and so badly wounded. You know, it's incredible when they talk about wounded. They don't say that arms are off and legs are off. One person lost two legs. You know, nobody talks about it. They said eight died, but they don't talk about the 12 people that have no legs, no arms, and all of the things. So I'm talking about everybody. I really believe that when you talk about the subject that we're all mentioning right now, I think they had how many people came in? 22 to 24 people came in through him. He's a killer. He's a guy who ran over many people. Eight died. 10 to 12 are really badly injured. So I really think that a lot of people are going to agree with us now on that subject. I really don't see there's a big...
70% of Americans want the immigration policy to be the family, the nuclear family, and the worker. 70%.
David, chain migration, though, has taken a very big hit in the last year with what's happening. I mean, you're looking at these killers, whether you like or not. We're looking at these killers, and then you see 18 people came in, 22 people came in, 30 people came in with this one person that just killed a lot of people. I really don't believe there are a lot of Democrats that are going to be supporting chain migration anymore.
Well, should we have the Homeland Security Secretary?
If you don't mind, just a couple things on border security. I just want to try to make sure we're all linking.
DHS Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen.
The reason that border security is so important to have as part of this discussion is that it doesn't solve the problem if we can apprehend people but we can't remove them. So we need the wall system, which is some physical infrastructure as the president described, personnel and technology, but we have to close those legal loopholes, because the effect of that is this incredible pull up from Central America that just continues to exacerbate the problem. So border security has to be part of this, or we will be here again in 3, 4, 5 years. Again, maybe unfortunately sooner. The other point I would just make is the president asked DHS, he asked the men and women of DHS, what do you need to do your job? Congress and the American people have entrusted to you the security of our country. What is it that you need? The list that we have provided is what we need to do our mission that you asked us to do. It's not less than, it's not more than, it is what we need to close those loopholes to be able to protect our country. So I would just encourage everyone, much more eloquently than I can, described all the reasons why we all, I think, here are committed to helping the DACA population. But to truly solve the problem, it's got to be in conjunction with border security.
Later at her daily briefing, White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders answered some questions from reporters.
As you know, the president spoke at length during the immigration meeting this morning and answered even a few questions for you. So we're going to keep it a little shorter today here in the briefing. So with that, I will take your questions. Major.
Can you help us clarify, when the Democrats came out, they applauded the president for organizing the meeting, but said it was their understanding this would be a two-phase process, DACA first, and then other elements that you outlined in your statement second, and that they perceive January 19th, not March 5th, as the deadline for action. Can you explain the president's interpretation of the meeting and that assessment of the congressional Democrats?
Right. The president just concluded what we felt was a very successful and productive bipartisan and bicameral meeting on immigration reform. During the closed-door session, the leadership agreed to negotiate and narrow the focus to four issues: border security, chain migration, visa lottery, and DACA. They all agreed that those four things would be part of the negotiation. And beyond that, then they could move into additional scope. But at this point, those are the four things on the table and the four things that we anticipate that they'll be negotiating.
Those four things are phase one from the president's perspective.
Correct.
And are they tied to January 19th or March 5th?
We haven't outlined the date, and I'm certainly not going to negotiate what that date looks like from the podium. That's something that we're going to work with Congress on. But those are the four areas that they all agreed at the conclusion of the meeting to narrow the scope and the focus to. John?
How confident are you that those four things will remain part of phase one of this process? Senator Dianne Feinstein posited the idea of doing a clean DACA bill, which the president at first seemed to embrace before.
Only if you look at what the president's definition of a clean DACA bill is. And within that bill, he thinks that you have to include not just fixing DACA, but closing the loopholes and making sure we have a solution on that front so we don't create a problem and find ourselves right back where we started in 1, 2, 3 years later.
Which is clearly different than her perspective on a clean DACA bill, because she clearly stated that she thinks they should do a clean DACA bill, just handle the Dreamers, and then handle border security as part of comprehensive immigration reform.
So is
the president setting himself up here for a battle where the Democrats are going to say, no, let's just do DACA, and he's on the other side, and then there's no coming together?
I think the president is setting himself up to achieve what everybody in that room agreed they wanted to see happen, and that is a deal on DACA, a deal on border security, talking about chain migration and visa lottery. That's where we are in this process. Those are the four principles. Matthew.
Thanks, Sarah. Two quick questions, if I may. The Democrats said after the meeting that they support border security measures, and that their understanding is that the president uses the term wall and border security interchangeably. Is that true?
We certainly believe that the wall is part of border security. That's one component of it. We firmly, again, believe that border security has to be part of this negotiation and part of this deal. So, Michael.
Can I ask just a question about phase two of the immigration issue as the president laid it out today? So once you get past the DACA debate and some of these other issues, Senator Lindsey Graham seems to lay on the table the idea of something that Senator Graham supports, which is a comprehensive plan that would include a path to citizenship for all 11 or 12 million, however many you count them, people that are illegally in this country. And the president seemed to respond, you know, let's do it, let's go for it, something along those lines. So are we to then take away that the president is firmly committed to a path to citizenship, to trying to get to a path to citizenship for all 11 million illegal immigrants in the country, once phase two comes?
Like, right, our focus is on the four things that I laid out. Okay. That's where our negotiation is, and that's phase one. And that's our, hold on, that's our focus and our priority. We're certainly open to talking about a number of other issues when it comes to immigration, but right now this administration is focused on those four things and that negotiation and not a lot else at this front. Stephen.
Thanks, Sarah. Just to take another stab at Michael's question, can you help us understand the term as the president used it? What does comprehensive immigration reform mean to this White House?
Again, our focus, like I told Michael, is those four priorities, border security, ending chain migration, ending the visa lottery system, and coming up with a permanent solution to DACA. That's where we're focused, and that's what we're going to be committed to during this negotiation process.
As much as the president today seemed to say, okay, let's go on to comprehensive immigration reform the afternoon.
As he said, once we get through this process, he said, let's get this deal done, and then we'll take an hour off, and then we'll move on to the next phase of the negotiation. Right now, this administration is focused on those things and making sure we get that deal done, and then we'll move forward from that point.
So
Jessica?
Has the president not decided what comprehensive immigration reform means to him?
Look, I'm not going to negotiate with you from the podium. This is something that the leadership agreed to, primarily led by Kevin McCarthy and the president in this meeting, that this would be the focus coming out of today. Let's get a deal on this, and then we'll move forward and talk about other things. Jordan.
Thanks, Sarah. It's pretty unusual for us in the press corps to have a front row seat to those kind of negotiations in the cabinet room for an hour. Whose decision was it to allow the press in to witness that entire negotiation, and what was the goal of having us sit there and watch?
Just to be clear, you weren't there for the entire negotiation, because the deal didn't take place until after you guys left. I think a number of individuals in the room felt it was a good thing to let you see the cooperation and the conversation between both sides, and see how we're working and leading to move the ball down the field and come up with some real solutions. John?
Yeah. Thank you, Sarah.
Going back to the wall, last summer, Governor Gracas, the head of the Mexican Governors Association, said that when the president started talking about a price tag on building the wall, that meant he'd given up on his idea of making Mexico pay for it. Now, in his remarks in Tennessee and in his recent speeches, the president has talked about the cost of the wall, and there's been no mention of his standard phrase, and Mexico will pay for it. Has the president abandoned the idea of Mexico paying for the wall?
No, he hasn't. Peter.
Sarah, just to be clear, if the president wants a bill of love, why doesn't he drop the demand for a border wall and deal with the Dreamers alone immediately?
Because you have to have a full solution to this problem. You have to make sure that you're taking every step in border security, and you want to make sure that if you fix things on DACA, you don't create and exacerbate the problem and have to deal with it again in a year. The president wants to make sure we have a clean solution to that front, and that's what we're going
to
do.
So what does the president say to young men like 24-year-old Jesus Contreras? He's from Houston. He's a paramedic. He's been working hard in this country to help make other lives better, who are now waiting for Congress to come up with something, or they may get shipped to a country they've never known.
He says exactly what he just did in that room. Let's work together. Let's figure this out. I'm leading on this effort and bringing all the members that need to be part of the conversation to the table. And he said he was confident that they would come together and get it done. And so that's what we're going to do. Trey.
If I could follow up on the immigration meetings today, is the president concerned about the differences that Democrats and Republicans have when it comes to defining phrases like border security?
They have a lot of things that they agree on, and that's what we're going to focus on. But again, I'm not going to negotiate with you guys. Look, I've laid out what the principles and the priorities are and what all of the individuals in the meeting today agreed to narrow the scope to, and that's what we're going to continue to push for. Jake.
Thank you, Sarah. First of all, on border security, we're hearing a lot about immigration. How big of a role, though, does drug trafficking play right now in vis-a-vis the president and Congress?
It's certainly a factor. It's one of the reasons that the president is very committed to border security, wants to stop the influx of drugs coming into this country.
But surely it's going to be more than just the wall, because drugs are very easily flung over a wall, right?
Correct. Border security is more than just the wall. Charlie?
Thank you, Sarah. A lot of immigration critics believe that a DACA deal, by its very nature, is considered to be amnesty. Does the White House believe that that is amnesty?
No, and we believe that this is an important part of the process, and again, one that we're committed to finding a solution for. Jim?
Just to be crystal clear on this, does the president want a wall in exchange for giving those Dreamers protection?
The president wants border security.
Okay.
And just to be clear.
Okay. So what does border security entail? Does it include the wall at this stage, or could the wall wait until later?
The wall is one of the pieces, as well as technology and a number of other things that have been laid out by the Department of Homeland Security. I believe that Secretary Nielsen spoke about that pretty extensively at the meeting today. That portion was covered by you all during that time frame.
The wall has to be part of a deal in order for these Dreamers to have protection.
Border security does have to be part of this process.
I mean, there's a difference.
Why we want to secure our border? I absolutely do, because the safety and security of the people of this country are the president's number one responsibility and his number one priority when it comes to anything that he does. So absolutely.
But you understand how the law could be different than border security, Sarah. Border security can mean drones. It can mean agents. It could mean more fencing. It doesn't necessarily mean a physical.
And that's part of the negotiation that we expect Congress to have.
But you understand Democrats are saying that they may not be in favor of this kind of deal. That they're not
if Democrats are in favor of protecting American citizens, then I think we've hit a sad day in American history, but I don't believe that to be the case, because as we heard many of them say as they sat around that table when several of you were in the room, they are committed to border security. They do want it, and most of them have voted for it previously before this legislation hit the floor. So anything different is just
a wall. If they say thanks but no thanks for a wall.
Jim, I'm not negotiating with you. I'm going to let Congress take care of that.
Yes. Sarah.
Does the president have a fixed set of principles and priorities for comprehensive immigration reform, or does he believe that that's something he should be flexible on when it comes to that?
Look, as I've said, I'm not going to negotiate with you guys. We're going to do that with Congress. We've laid out what we want right now, and we'll make announcements when we move beyond those four priorities that we've laid out.
is in. I got stopped by the immigration man. He said he doesn't know if he can. Let me in. Let me in. Immigration man. Can I cross the line and break? I can stay another day. Let me in. Immigration man. I won't tow your line today. I can't see it anyway. There he was, with his immigration face, giving me a paper chase. But the sun was coming, 'cause all it was, he looked into my space, stamped a number over my face, and he sent me running. Won't you let me in, immigration man? Can I cross the line and pray I can stay another day? Won't you let me in, immigration man? I won't tow your line today. I can't see it anyway. With my immigration form, it's big enough to keep me warm. When a cold wind's coming, so go where you will, as long as you think you can. You better watch out for the man. Anywhere you're going, come on and let me in. Immigration man, can I cross the line and pray? Take your fingers from the tray. Irritation man, I won't tow your line today. I can't see it anyway.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.
Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. A cursory glance at the media environment could easily give you the impression that the vast majority of journalists studied psychology at university. So many are convinced Donald Trump is not mentally fit to be president. Are the same journalists suffering from Trump derangement syndrome? Crosstalk in the media, I'm joined by my guest, Steve Maltzberg in New York. He is a conservative political commentator. In Bloomington, Indiana, we have Kevin Howley. He is a professor of media studies at DePaul University and author of Drones, Media, Discourse, and the Public Imagination. I love that title. And in West Palm Beach, we cross to Dr. Gina Loudon. She is a psychology expert and host of America Trends with Dr. Gina. Okay, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Kevin, let me go to you first here. Is the media suffering from Trump derangement syndrome? Because I could go through the things that we've had to deal with. I mean, I actually made up a list here, you know, from pussy hat marches to the Comey stuff to the Steele dossier and its contents. We have the Mueller investigation. We have a shady lawyer and Don Jr. being just as shady, one might say. Then we have these long distance experts determining the mental health of the president of the United States. And every single one, and there's a lot more, the media goes bonkers. So are the media bonkers? Go ahead, Kevin.
Nothing new under the sun in many respects. We've seen this before. We can go back to any number of instances. Think about the Clinton impeachment and how that became a national obsession, or the O.J. Simpson trial. What we're seeing here, I think, is an amplification, an intensification of a tendency that's been part of the media, part of the sort of the part of the DNA of the corporate media for many years now.
Okay, Steve, I do think it is different because they're trying to unseat this president without any due cause. And, I'm a layperson. We'll talk to Gina in a second. She has more expertise in this here. But when I see people going on CNN and MSNBC saying the president of the United States is insane and should be removed from office, that's going too far. I don't think anybody said Bill Clinton was insane, okay? He had a problem with his zipper, not his mental health. Go ahead, Steve.
No, I mean, this is unprecedented. It's a continuation of Bush derangement syndrome. Notice it skips Democratic presidents. They hated Bush. They said all kinds of disrespectful things against him, but not to this extent. I mean, I've talked to people like, in the Nixon White House who said they hated Nixon, but they've never seen anything like this. What the media is doing now is more dangerous than anything they have done because they're telling the world, they're so worried about Donald Trump's tweets. They're telling the world every single day, and of course it's not true, that our president is mentally incapacitated, unable to perform his duties, and that we're very, very weak at this point, and that we have a lot of enemies out there. So they think they're playing this little game to get rid of the president and throwing journalism aside, but they're actually doing severe harm to our country.
And I would say to journalism itself, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. Gina, let me go to you in West Palm Beach. I mean, you're a professional in mental health. I mean, how do you react to seeing journalists on the cable stations talking about the health level of the president of the United States? It must be quite shocking for you because you are an expert.
Well, it's interesting because I don't think that they would diagnose the president, without ever even talking to him in most cases or having a chance to speak with him clinically. And so it really does say a lot more, honestly, about their own obsession with overturning an American election. I mean, that's what this really comes down to. They really just want to make this whole thing go away. They're not happy with the election results, so they'll try everything they can to negate it. And it says a lot more about their mental steadiness, if you will, than it does his. If you look at the fact that he has functioned so amazingly well, even despite all of the constant barrage of hate coming at him from the media and from the establishment and even some on his own side, it says that he is a pretty mentally fit guy to be able to withstand all that and still be so productive.
You know, Kevin, I was looking at some of the excerpts of Michael Wolff's book. I don't want to pay for it. WikiLeaks put it online for free. Good. They did more good there. I looked through some of the excerpts there. And, this is just trash. Okay, I can't believe a lot of the things that he's writing. There's no corroboration there. The reason why I mention it, who cares about the National Enquirer, okay? But again, it's pulled onto the networks and the cable stations, confirming their prejudice, their blind hatred, and it hurts the country, it hurts journalism. And I think Gina just brought up a really good point. I mean, I'd have never seen anyone take so much pressure, day in and day out, and he's still going on. I mean, I find that actually quite remarkable. But I'm not saying I agree with everything he says or tweets. I'm exasperated by a lot of it, like a lot of other people. Go ahead, Kevin.
Yeah, a couple things. I think we have to, again, take a little historical perspective here, right? The partisan press of the 1800s was divisive in ways that are very reminiscent of what we're seeing today. So again, I don't think that it helps to suggest that this is somehow an anomaly. I think this has historical precedent, particularly when you have a very partisan press, whether it was back in the days of Abraham Lincoln or in contemporary America. As far as Trump taking the pressure quite well, I think that is definitely debatable.
Okay.
It strikes me, and I'm not alone on this, right? It strikes me that there are many instances where he seems particularly rattled by any sort of criticism. And the tweet storms are, frankly embarrassing. And so you have the President of the United States lashing out at critics in ways that undermines the legitimacy of the presidency. Now, I'm not a psychologist, so I'm not going to get into those.
I don't think that's true at all. That's true at all.
All right. Well, again, here we need to have a debate about it.
You may not like...
Go ahead, jump in, Kevin.
We've never had a
Steve,
I think.
Sorry,
but
Steve.
But anyway, That's okay. Look, the fact of the matter is this president took the press to task from day one. He told it like it is. He was the only person who could beat Hillary Clinton because he was the only person who would stand up there and scold the press and scold his detractors and call them out for what they are. That's what the people who voted for him love about him. The fact that he tweets out these things, there's nothing wrong
with
that. It doesn't diminish the presidency. It's who he is. He's not a politician, and people have to get used to that. They never will, and that's too darn bad,
quite
frankly.
He's not a politician. You're right. I absolutely agree with that. And that, I think, is part of the problem. I mean, he is, in many ways, a tabloid creature.
But at the same time,
now
we have
some... And he's a creature of the tabloid culture that we have today.
Yes, that's true. Now we have symmetry, because he's an anomalous president, and I would say we have an anomalous media. Gina, jump in. You know, all of these mistakes, all of these bad reporting that we've seen here, and never a backstory or, you know, explanation. You know, the last one with Don Jr. and the emails, you know, the dates were wrong. Did CNN, NBC, did they
CNN,
ever explain?
CBS, they were made mistakes, and they weren't held accountable for
Okay, so
if I can just jump in here,
Gina, go ahead.
This is the president who has decreased black unemployment to an all-time low. This is the president who has black housing. More black families have houses than ever before, certainly during the Obama presidency, who was supposed to be the so-called black president because he likes to chop people up and divide them that way. This president is the president of all people. He said he wants all people to be as rich as him. And yet, where is the heralding of that in the media? He's declared January Human Trafficking Month. Is slavery not an issue we can all agree on? Where is that in the media? I mean, you can see the bias written all over them. And for anyone who wants to argue that his tweets are somehow not presidential, that's how he communicates his message, because he has no other way since the press won't do it. And we know that he's a counterpuncher. And you know what? Americans love that. We are so tired of having a president that won't stand up for us to the rest of the world and put America first. This is not only not diminishing the presidency, this is the presidency going forward.
Okay, Steve, do you want to jump in there before we go to the break? Go ahead.
Peter, they're putting this wolf character out there who admits half my book is inaccurate. When people like Ed Klein and conservative authors can't buy a ticket to any of the shows when they write a book critical of Hillary or Obama, they're ignored, they're mocked as you know, jokes and inaccurate. But this wolf guy, he's all over the place. The double standard is just horrific.
Okay, Kevin, you know, I think we all saw this segment with Stephen Miller and Jake Trapper on CNN. I mean, you know, we have Stephen Miller. He's invited on his program to talk about what was going on in Camp David with GOP officials the weekend before. He was asked to come on and talk policy. I watched the tape. Jake Trapper did not want to talk about policy. Gina does. Gina just mentioned facts, okay? Where is CNN when talking about facts? That was an ambush. He was very rude. Jake Trapper was very unprofessional. Go ahead. That's the bias that I'm talking about. Kevin.
Well, again, I think what you're seeing is a lot of the corporate channels are chasing this story, particularly the Russiagate story. You know, whether or not that's a legitimate investigation or not, that remains to be seen, right? What we need to keep in mind is that there are some substantive questions about this presidency, right? I think in terms of his Twitter feed alone, I think it would be behoove corporate media to ignore that for a time. In fact, I'd like to see Twitter suspend his account because he's breaking user agreements.
Oh, my gosh.
Right? But let's get back to the basics.
You're seriously not advocating
We're all chasing the same. Okay. I thought we could have a conversation, but we're all chasing the same. Yes, it's scandalous. I asked for a conversation. Right.
No.
Let's tone it down. Right. And deliberate a little bit. And because
are you directing that to the president of the United States or the liberal media? Okay.
You want to censor the president? You're asking
gonna
for a conversation.
We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on the media. Stay with RT.
You're listening to Weekday World from CPR.
Okay, let me go back to West Palm Beach, where it's probably the warmest on this program. Gina, you know, I consider myself a Midwesterner. I grew up my childhood in Colorado, so I know that the heartland, you know, and, you know, we can talk about all of the intricacies of the campaign, who did it right, who did it wrong, how much money was paid. But, you know, it was really the deplorable statement. And I think that really brought home to the voters, you know, who they are, the voters in the country, and where they stand in the eyes of the media. Because I still contend that the media elected Donald Trump because they have contempt for the public. The media has absolute contempt for the public, and Donald Trump, he stood up for them. I mean, again, I'm not going to carry water for the president of the United States. He's a very complicated man, and he's done and said things that I really don't like, okay? But the fact of the matter is, the way that the media treated him actually helped him, and the media continues to help him because of the way their bad treatment of him. And in the heartland, they feel it every single day. Go ahead, Gina.
Yeah, the Trump-Russia conspiracy theory that they just cannot seem to let go of is helping him every single day that's still in the news, because it is going to come out. Mark my words, I said it right here, and I promise you, it is going to come out that the only collusion that took place was on the Democrats' side. We will see this, and all of the people who have been beating this drum so relentlessly for so long are going to look like the fools that they are. And furthermore, it's going to expose them. The more that they talk about him being insane or anything other than policy, as you said earlier, the more that they talk about how he shouldn't tweet or how he's not mentally fit or any of those things, the more it exposes them, their lack of mental fitness, their collusion, and their own problems within their party. Yeah. The bottom line is they don't have policy issues to run on. They don't have candidates, unless it's Oprah, and even she is yet to be determined as anything viable. And so they have themselves in a really bad place, and their despair is what is showing.
You know, Kevin, you know, one can, you know, call the president of the United States deplorable. I mean, now we know that there are high officials at the FBI calling the president of the United States an idiot, a buffoon, insane. You know what? That's all fine. That's all your opinion. And I think people have a right to say that here. But, you know, shouldn't the media hold itself up to a higher bar? Because it's not getting them anywhere. People have very little regard and trust in the news right now. CNN goes from one blunder to another and brushes it off like, don't look here, move on. They don't take any responsibility. So I wonder who has to be held up to a higher bar. I mean, all these sophisticated people on the coasts are better than Donald Trump. They don't show it on a daily basis. Go ahead, Kevin.
Well, again, I think we need to put this in a larger perspective, right? Journalists make mistakes. Oftentimes, usually, they own up to it. CNN, CBS, NBC made a horrific mistake last week, and they weren't held accountable, and they weren't holding themselves accountable, right? That's a problem. I agree 100% on that score. But to suggest that the news media shouldn't take an adversarial position to people in positions of power and authority is to give way to authoritarianism, right? And this is not the way we need to conduct ourselves. We need to have a vibrant press, a press that's not afraid to ask tough questions and to hold people in positions of power accountable.
Okay.
Now, I don't know that some of these formats like this one are well-suited to do that.
Okay, I mean, this gets down to it. I'll address this
Kevin,
to... let me hang on here. Let me, Steve, and I'll address this to both of you, Steve and Gina here. I mean, what happened to the idea of a loyal opposition? Because the media has abandoned that, okay? Asking hard questions is fine. Oh, for 8 years, Barack Obama was never asked one hard question, okay? Not one. He was given a complete free pass for
Absolutely
8 years. You know, and but Kevin is right. I mean, there should be adversarial, but they treat him as the enemy, okay? That is very different than how they treated like Nixon or even Bush. Go ahead, Steve.
Look, they said nothing to Hillary about the women for years and years and years that accused Bill Clinton, and then how Hillary helped treat them. And that never would have been an issue today if Hillary had won. You're absolutely right. Look, Barack Obama stood by and watched Putin take Crimea. He stood by and he watched Putin go into Syria. He stood by and he watched Uranium One go to Putin. He stood by and he did nothing nearly as much as he could have done when it came to cybersecurity with Russia. And he said on the hot mic, tell Vladimir I'll have more leeway after the election. Yet it's Trump who's the Putinite. It's Trump who's in bed with Putin. That's because we don't have an adversarial media when it comes to Democrats. We just plain don't, because they're all Democrats. Fact. They're all Democrats.
Hell, let me go to Gina. I mean, most of the people working with Mueller are Democrats, too, and gave to Democratic candidates. Okay, go ahead, Gina.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And that's why this president is such a threat, because he has come in and said he's going to clean house. And as the elite who have enjoyed their very luxurious, cushy lifestyles, their access to the White House, right? The bureaucrats extend beyond the media as part of those enjoying that whole cushy lifestyle. And so that's when the president came along and said he was going to drain the swamp. You couldn't say more paralyzing, frightening words to the elite establishment in Washington, D.C. than those. And that goes all the way to both coasts, to the banking industry, to the real money in the United States. And that's why, as you mentioned early in the conversation, they want to delegitimize. In fact, if they could just make the Electoral College go away so the only votes that count were those in the financial centers on the coasts, and just overlook the heartland altogether, they would do it in a heartbeat, because that would mean they could get away with the corruption that this president is cleaning up.
Okay, well, the Electoral College is really interesting. I just say to our viewers here, if they get rid of the Electoral College, then we have to get rid of California, Washington, and Oregon, okay? And that'll create a little bit of balance there, or else it'll be Democrat forever, okay? Just these little archipelagos on the East and West Coast will dominate the country's politics here. You know, Kevin, you know, what does the media have to do to get its credibility back? Because, as we have pointed out on this program, so many gaffes. And or is it just the business model? It's just built in right now. I mean, you write these trashy, salacious stories, and you get hits and eyeballs. And that's your model. Well, I mean, there's nothing wrong with making money for your shareholders, but I thought journalism had a higher cause, like informing people. Go ahead.
Well, a lot to take on there. I think we need to start with trying to avoid taking on very difficult, complex, nuanced questions and doing it in such a simple-minded fashion.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's large part of what's going on. You know, to take just one example, the whole notion of Trump coming in to drain the swamp. If you look at the man's cabinet, if you look at his policies, at the look at what he's done over the past year, clearly this is a textbook example of crony capitalism. There's no such thing as draining the swamp. What he's done is he's putting people in positions of power to dismantle the government, to dismantle regulations, and to invite, you know, take the tax package that just passed, right? This is a giant giveaway. This has very little to do with the middle class and certainly nothing to do with working class
people. To the taxpayers.
This is a giveaway. This is the gift to the moneyed class.
Okay. Well,
how do you say that $1,000 average per family is not something
class.
Going to the taxpayers?
Gina, go ahead. Jump in. Go ahead.
Yeah, I, his words don't even make sense to most people, normal, deplorable types like me out there. When he says that he's eliminated regulations, that is eliminating government. That is quintessentially draining the swamp. When he says that he's eliminated whole vast parts of departments, making government smaller is bringing it closer to the people. That was the intention of the founders of our Constitution. And the president is restoring that in record time with more than 80 accomplishments in his first year and repealing more than 11 of Obama's rule by edict. He is eliminating the swamp. It's systematic. And you can say that his cabinet is comprised of, I mean, you can label people however you want, but the actions speak a lot louder than the words, my friend.
Okay, well, you know, Steve, I mean...
Yeah, and the actions are speaking quite loudly in terms of whether it's environmental policy or whether it's tax policy, right? Any suggestion that this is nothing more than a handout to the well-to-do is wishful thinking.
Okay, well, we're going into the weeds here, okay? I want to talk about the media still. We got two more minutes still.
Yeah.
And, you know, Steve, I mean, the problem is that the media is so damn elitist, and they cannot see outside of their ideological bubble. They simply can't comprehend how other people live, okay? And, you know, Donald Trump, like him or hate him, he traveled the country back and forth. He even went up to the blue wall. No wonder it fell, okay? He saw how the American people live. This is one of the things that I admire him for, actually getting his hands dirty and actually talking to people. And the Democrats don't have a message. They're not connected with the people. This one man is, I don't know about the GOP. One minute left. Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, Peter, the media doesn't care. They're in their elitist bubble, and their purpose is to ruin the presidency of Donald Trump. In the meantime, it's to get the Congress back in the hands of the Democrats, and the first thing they'll do is impeach the president. That is their whole purpose. When you have ESPN anchors calling the president effing stupid, and when you have Fareed Zakaria on two separate occasions saying over and over in the same separate shows, the president's a BS artist, but he says the word, and nothing happens. And there's many examples of that throughout the media. They have a goal. They don't care about middle America. They don't care about anything. Their management is on board. They're on board. Ruin the presidency of Donald Trump at all costs.
Gina, 20 seconds. Go ahead.
I chose to support this president when I saw him stay after very early on in the campaign, while all the other 15 Republican candidates ducked out after they talked to the alphabet soup media. I watched this president stay for 2 hours and answer questions from every little citizen journalist blogger. That's how much he cares about the people that haven't had a voice in America, including the low-level media. And
we have totally run out of time. Many thanks to my guests in New York, Bloomington, and in West Palm Beach. And thanks to our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, Crosstalk rules.
You're listening to Weekday World from CPR, Community Public Radio. I'm your host, Don DeBar.